Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks, Wayne, for that introduction. The word MPTs, for me, it reminds me some years ago, many years ago, when my grandmother and my mother had this medicine, which was for everything. You are sick, you've got a headache, you are about to have a headache, you're about to have this, you take that medicine. And I think, you know, Suzanne mentioned that from time immemorial, when you looked at the Egyptian pyramids, etc., multipurpose prevention technologies were there. And now we are in an era where we want to leverage technology and we want to leverage science for the betterment of women's kind. So I hope you will enjoy this presentation, ladies and a few gentlemen. So what opportunity are we talking about today? We are talking about what Suzanne has just spoken about, you know, having this technology that will help prevent unwanted pregnancies, sexual transmitted infections, including HIV, and other reproductive tract infections, bacterial vaginosis, urinary tract infections, etc. It may come in any form that you can imagine, and right now we do have a pipeline for drug-to-drug MPTs, for vaccine MPTs. Mm-hmm. You're leveraging nanotechnology for that use, and hopefully in our lifetime we're going to see this. So how is my presentation laid out? I'm going to give us a brief overview, and most likely most of us know the epidemiological profile of HIV and other STIs and unintended pregnancies in sub-Saharan Africa. And I'm going to give us a highlight of some of the user needs and perspectives of an MPT product across different populations of women. And, you know, we are in a space where you know that in a woman's life cycle, and even a woman's menstrual cycle, she's got different needs, and want to see whether MPTs could actually fit in this within these needs. And again, we are not naive of some of the systems and healthcare challenges, but within those challenges, there are opportunities, and want to see how we could leverage those. So, ladies and gentlemen, there is definitely an epidemiological need for MPTs. Given the state of the problem of HIV, the number of infections that we see annually, and knowing that HIV is actually fueled by comorbidities, again, viral and bacterial infections, and there is evidence to that effect. And statistics show that about 200 million women in developing countries have an unmet need for contraception. And you know the consequences of all that. Recently in South Africa, we've been having running battles where the Minister of Health is actually called and said, what are we going to do with contraception in South Africa? In one clinic alone, there were 1,800 abortions, young girls between 15 and about 22 having abortions like legally backstreet and even within the clinic within a period of like 4 months. And so the minister was worried, why are people using TOP as a method of contraception? So there is definitely an unmet need. And also, one of the things that we have learned is that there are reproductive health trade-offs that are being made between HIV and contraception. And again, that's an opportunity and it's also a challenge, and we need to look into that. We know that HIV is still the major driver of mortality, and if we could have something else, you know, that we could use to help women especially protect themselves from HIV, that would go a long way. And that's why my perspective today is about where we are coming from in the microbicide field, where we said we need a tool that a woman can use, that a woman can preferably control, and she's protected from HIV. And the word around that is empowerment and power over AIDS. But we know that over and above this, and you know how we've approached HIV, some other things have been brewing on the side. For example, teenage pregnancies have been on the rise. There is unmet contraceptive need. And also now we are seeing all these unwanted linkages between HIV and contraception. How are we as reproductive health professionals, how are we going to stop that linkage? Again, I've spoken about the statistics that are there, and I just wanted to highlight that. And as you look at these comorbidities and all these issues, you will see the need for MPTs. For example, HSV and HIV, I think various studies have been done there. And we know also that HIV enhances progression of CIN, or when somebody has got HPV, you are likely to progress to cancer of the cervix. We also know that HIV risk is higher in pregnancy, either acquisition or even progression to AIDS. And also we know that HIV accounts right now for more than 40% of cases of maternal mortality. In South Africa, we've placed that at 44% being directly attributed to HIV. Can we have something that can dually protect women from both HIV and unwanted pregnancies? And also we know there's a bidirectional relationship between HIV and other STIs. STIs have been hailed as one of the major drivers of HIV acquisition in sub-Saharan Africa, given our inadequacies from the syndromic management or syndromic treatment of STIs. We need something that people, and especially women, can use to protect themselves from HIV. Ladies and gentlemen, we are sitting here because we don't want to continue having these trade-offs. It's either you're protected from HIV, but we don't know about pregnancy. It's either you're protected from pregnancy, but we don't know how to solve your HIV problem, or the other way around. And we are saying we are tired of these trade-offs. Can we have something? And I'm sure with all these brains and all these great minds, we can actually reduce this vulnerability. This is a case, I'm not going to go through it, but it's a case of a woman who is vulnerable to HIV. She is sexually active. She doesn't have time to go to the clinic or to the facilities to access care at any given time. She has to take a day off. She doesn't have many of those days, because if she does take a day off, she's going to be sort of reprimanded. She doesn't have that time. What does she have to do? You take a day off to access to meet your contraceptive needs. You take a day off for HPV, for pap smear screening. You take another day off maybe for, I don't know, to go and get condoms, which are largely accessible in clinics. And you see that this is a challenge when it comes to access. So Cynthia's greatest challenge in this case is time and convenience, which we don't have in the way we deliver healthcare services in Africa. Imagine if she was protected from HIV and she could still meet her contraceptive needs. A small one. This is a quote that I actually got from a 15-year-old matric student from Kukuletu in Cape Town, who says, "The clinic near my school is often closed by the time I finish school. Going to the clinic every month is difficult, and this is the reason why there are so many unwanted pregnancies in my area. Remember, we do not like to use condoms all the time." So I'm thinking, imagine, and I don't know whether this is scientifically feasible at all, to actually have something that she can take every month. She is protected from HIV, and she can still meet her contraceptive needs. I'm not suggesting that we can mix Depo-Provera and Maraviroc, probably not. But also imagine if she received an HPV or HSV combination vaccine. That would actually go a long way in making sure that DT is protected. And again, this is, you know, we do work also in Zambia, and I actually noted this court when we were doing work on microbicides. And, you know, people say, why a commercial sex worker is also a peer educator? Probably that is another multi-purpose person as well, because we do have, they want to reach out to their communities. So you find commercial sex workers who by the day they actually do something else in their community. So this one was quoted saying, if we have a gel, it should in addition protect us from other STIs, because that's what they are worried about mainly. And that way, she says, women will use it even more. Women will use the gel, meaning the microbicide, they will use it even more. This question has actually come over and over again in the communities where we work in South Africa. Imagine, ladies and gentlemen, where you've got a gel that can help protect Cynthia from HIV and from STIs. And I'm sure we're all sold into the case of why we need multipurpose prevention technologies. And we're saying these can potentially reduce costs in healthcare. And right now, one of the major drivers of healthcare costs is actually labor, staff time. How do we make sure that we've got, a staff member spends minimal time per patient, but also if a patient is going to come in every month, how can we reduce that? So think about it that way. Also, equipment, if you're going to have a vaccine that covers many other diseases, look at EPI vaccines. EPI is expanded program on immunization, you know, the ones that we give for our children. Imagine if you can use maybe one syringe, it's combination vaccine, and it covers a broad range of diseases. Also, costs for women who seek family planning and health promotion. Actually, if you've got an MPT, this would potentially save that. And also, access to life-saving technologies in Tanzania. Well, if you look at the ARV program in Tanzania, they say 50% of the cost for a woman is actually from transport, is incurred when she's trying to reach a healthcare facility. If that is repeated over and over again, that actually that cost is being absorbed by a woman. And if we could reduce the number of times a woman has to go to the clinic, that would also go a long way in ensuring healthcare. Another issue that we have found in the microbicide field, and every person who is researching on microbicides, they talk about adherence issues. Women should take their product, they should use their product. We've told them over and over again. And, you know, if imagine if I can't adhere to HIV and some HIV prevention methodology, then there's another STI prevention methodology, then there's contraceptive. I take 22 tablets a day. It's like a meal of tablets and gels and rings, etc. If I had one or if I had two, the chances of me adhering to the protocol, adhering to the regimen, are actually going to be better. And this, again, is a picture that we took in from Kukuletu. We had a study tour a few weeks ago. Imagine, how do you dispose of product in this kind of environment? Ladies and gentlemen, I found that a group of 75 people use only one tap, and they use only one toilet. How do you dispose? If you've got many technologies that a person has to use, how do you dispose of those if they need for disposal? Let's think about the environment and let's think about these issues. Also, clearly we know that there is an unmet need, but there are challenges as well. We know there is a need for MPTs. What are the various challenges that I'm sure if we actually combine our brains and thinking together, we can sort of overcome? Think of it this way. In the hierarchy of a woman's need, Suzanne put in her first slide or second slide, what does a woman want? What does a woman need? And surely if you go to different communities, women are going to tell you different things. And a woman does not say, I need a microbicide. A woman doesn't say, I want a formulation that is made from nanotechnology, isn't it? It's us who say, you know, this is probably best for the woman. What is a woman going to tell you? She will say, I need food for my children. I need school fees for my children. I need food. I want to overcome poverty. She will tell you that I've got housing needs. And if you look at these slides, for example, here, and you go and you are working in this environment, forget a microbicide. Forget multi-purpose prevention, forget anything. These women need something else. And in their own hierarchy of needs, these are the things that feature the most. So you see in their hierarchy of needs and our own hierarchy of what they need, it's totally different worlds. Even if you zero it and narrow it down as to pregnancy prevention, HIV and STI prevention, we know that they actually need that, but it doesn't feature highly in their needs. And again, they're not going to say, I'm going to help you to meet your Millennium Development Goals, isn't it? But we know that we need to contextualize all this in the context of development, and that is important. It is also a challenge because we go into communities and we say we want user perspectives for us to develop better products. But when you go to these communities, ladies and gentlemen, they say when you're going, but I don't have money for food. So how do you contextualize all these things? We can never have a successful technology without contextualizing it in the context of development. Again, regulatory hurdles are likely if you're talking about a product which has got four indications, because regulators are going to say, what is it for, isn't it? Because of their own system of approving drugs and in from clinical trials. Also, how do you plan these given the context of prevention and the ethical issues that's around standard of care within prevention trials from the microbicide field? Again, these are lessons. Potentially, it may take longer, but I don't know. Hopefully, when you use advanced technology, it may not. Competition against existing alternatives are likely to arise. You know, why should I take something that has got both when I can take one? So there is likely to be that competition, but we can learn in advance to position these products properly. Again, structural issues in most of sub-Saharan Africa remain, ladies and gentlemen. We are not naive that delivering a technology to those who need it most is not necessarily an easy thing. logistics and supply chain, healthcare and community worker buy-in. A healthcare worker is going to say, wow, this is brilliant, it's going to save my time. They may not. They may just, as they have done with the female condom, most of them they have packed it in the shelves. They don't know whether it's around or not. They don't know whether it's part of the, or it needs to be ordered or not. So we need to actually preempt these things and in advance anticipate them. Technology, again, as I've said, is only one piece of a puzzle in uplifting women's lives. And decision-making and women's agency is important. How do we position that product? Women need choices. They need power to be empowered to make the right choices. And instead of us saying this is what you need, whether they like it or not, isn't it? This is actually a picture of a clinic in South Africa that only comes in on Mondays between 5 and 8 in a community that has got about 300,000 people. This is the only clinic that they have. It's a mobile van. It only comes on Mondays between 5 and 8. So this is access that we're talking about in some communities. Other considerations, obviously, involve government priorities in terms of research. They may say, no, this is not in part of our research priorities. We need to consider something else. We need to also align our own research agenda to that, or even advocacy, so that it is part of their research priorities. End users' perspectives, I spoke about that. We need to consider how we're going to make this available to everyone who needs it, healthcare worker training, etc. Acceptability and adherence and even uptake is important. After we are done with the product, we need to consider monitoring and evaluation. Now, to conclude this talk, ladies and gentlemen, we know the need for MPTs is huge in sub-Saharan Africa. Throughout the research and development and product introduction, use people's stories and evidence to advocate for these solutions. You say, Suzanne, we need to advocate for more funding, we need to advocate for more research to take place, and we need to use people's lives, people's stories to place that on the agenda. Also, proactive collaboration is needed, and I think from the nature of this initiative, we are seeing that. Also, let's build on lessons that are learned from other SRH fields, like microbicide fields, and even others, like contraception. I use the term disruptive innovation and thinking in the process, meaning that we shouldn't just follow the status quo. For example, we've made blunders in terms of product pipeline, etc., in the microbicide field. We don't need to do that in the MPT field. We need more collaboration. You cannot work in silos. We need, as a collective, to actually move and disrupt, you know, the status quo. Again, the term I use, disruptive technology, is looking at the healthcare delivery system and saying, how do I omit step B and C so that I can get from A, I can just go to D. So that is disruptive thinking, not that MPTs are disruptive, but that we need disruptive technologies and innovation in actually overcoming these hurdles. Again, one thing that we have learned when we discuss this one later on is how to involve communities in research to avoid some of the disasters, again, that emerged from the microbicide field, trials, clinical trials shutting down, etc. Also, knowing that women need sexual and reproductive health options. This we have also learned from the microbicide field, that, you know, women come up and say, we need options, we need choice. In one room, one woman would say, I need a ring, the other one would say, I need a gel. So let's not be, you know, narrow-minded and say, this is the tool, and now we're going to go for it. People need choices. We need to involve authorities early, whether it's government authorities, whether it's MCC in South Africa, etc. We need to involve them early. We need to work alongside a country's research agenda. And again, we need to balance the efficacy and community availability. If we come up with a product that is only 40% effective, what is its uptake going to be? It's a hard sell at times. But we need to do it still. But it's a hard sell in the communities where we work. Product pipeline and innovative trial designs, we need to think about that right now, because incidence might be coming down for HIV, etc. So we need to think about innovative trial designs for us to launch MPT technologies research. Collaborative effort within countries is essential. Now, where comorbidities are high, as we have illustrated and the previous speaker illustrated, reproductive health trade-offs, where they are being made, we need disruptive thinking. Another issue is, the question for product developers is, how can we make these epidemiological health systems and social challenges that I've highlighted, ladies and gentlemen, how can we make them, how can we turn them into opportunities by using fewer resources to save more lives? Because we are in that period where we have to always check what's in our purse And how can we use that to save more lives? Technologies need not be additive. Now I've added this, which is actually conflict of technologies. When you go to a minister of health and say, now it's HPV, now it's HPV, now it's eight vaccines and eight technologies that they need to approve, for them it becomes conflict of technologies because they are additive. And can there be synergies in this? Can we integrate these so that we, even ministers of health are not confused? This is a photo that says the only thing that spreads, it actually says the only thing that spreads faster than HIV is a positive attitude. And it's a photo that was taken from Khayelitsha. Unfortunately, you cannot see it well. But if we have a positive, innovative attitude towards this, surely we can overcome these hurdles. Thank you.